On Southside Broadcasting, it's Jill Appleton in association with Macmillan College with the Young Person's Book of the Month.
Born in Afghanistan, Khalid Hosseini is a best-selling American novelist. In 2003, Hosseini's debut novel, The Kite Runner, hit the shelves and instantly became a bestseller. Over the course of 2 years, The Kite Runner maintained its position at the top of the New York Times list and sold 7 million copies in the United States. A number of adaptations of The Kite Runner have been created, including a graphic novel and a 2007 film of the same name. Overall, the book has received positive reviews.
The next morning, as he brewed me black tea for breakfast, Hassan told me he'd had a dream.
We were at Gaga Lake. You, me, Father, Aga Sahib, Rahim Khan and thousands of other people. It was warm and sunny and the lake was clear like a mirror, but no one was swimming because they said a monster had come to the lake and it was swimming at the bottom, waiting.
He poured me a cup and added sugar, blew on it a few times, and put it before me.
So everyone is scared to get in the water, and suddenly you kick off your shoes, Amir, and take off your shirt. There's no monster, you say. I'll show you all. And before anyone could stop you, you dive into the water and start swimming away. I follow you in, and we're both swimming.
But you can't swim. Hassan laughed.
It's a dream, Amir. You can do anything. Anyway, everyone is screaming, get out, get out, but we just swim in the cold water. We turn toward the shore and wave to the people. They look small like ants, but we can hear them clapping. They see now there is no monster, just water. They change the name after that and call it the Lake of Amir and Hassan, Sultans of Kabul. And we get to charge people money for swimming in it.
So what does that mean? I said.
He coated my naan with marmalade, placed it on a plate. I don't know. I was hoping you could tell me.
Well, it's a dumb dream. Nothing happens in it.
Father says dreams always mean something.
I sipped some tea. Why don't you ask him, then? He's so smart. I said more curtly than I intended to. I hadn't slept all night. My neck and back were like coiled springs and my eyes stung. Still, I'd been mean to Hassan. I almost apologised, then didn't. Hassan understood. I was just nervous about the kite tournament. Hassan always understood me.
We should get started,
Hassan said. He wore black rubber snow boots and a bright green chapeau over a thick sweater and faded corduroy pants. Suddenly, I wanted to withdraw, pack it all in and go home. What was I thinking? Why was I putting myself through this when I already knew the outcome? Baba was on the roof, watching me. I felt his glare on me like the heat from the blistering sun. This would be a failure on a grand scale, even for me. I'm not sure I want to fly a kite today, I said.
It's a beautiful day,
Hassan said. I shifted on my feet, tried to peel the gaze away from our rooftop. I don't know. Maybe we should go home. Then he stepped towards me in a low voice and said something that scared me a little.
Remember, Amir, there's no monster. Just a beautiful day.
How could I be such an open book to him when half the time I had no idea what was milling around in his head? I was the one who went to school, the one who could read, write. I was the smart one. Hassan couldn't read a first grade textbook, but he read me plenty. That was a little unsettling, but also sort of comfortable to have someone who always knew what you needed. No monster, I said. Feeling a little better, to my own surprise. He smiled.
No monster.
Are you sure? He closed his eyes, nodded. I looked at the kids scampering down on the street, flinging snowballs. It's a beautiful day, isn't it?
Let's fly,
he said.
The year's 2001, and narrator Amir is reflecting on the life he once had in Kabul. Traditionally, every year in the neighbourhood Amir lived in, there would be a kite-fighting competition. In the winter of 1975, Amir and his loyal friend Hassan are determined to win the competition, but winning results in a massive consequence that will haunt Amir for the rest of his life. Many years after the kite competition, Amir is in America and receives a phone call from an old friend, Rahim Khan, asking him for a life-changing request. From the fall of Afghanistan's monarchy through the Soviet military intervention and to the rise of the Taliban regime, Cerny presents the turmoil Afghanistan faced during their contemporary era.
Jade Mewand had turned into a giant sandcastle. The buildings that hadn't entirely collapsed barely stood, with caved roofs in and walls pierced with rocket shells. Entire blocks had been obliterated to rubble. I saw children playing in these ruins of a windowless building amid jagged stumps of brick and stone. Bicycle riders and mule-drawn carts swerved around kids, stray dogs, and piles of debris. A haze of dust hovered over the city, and across the river, a single plume of smoke rose up to the sky. "Where are the trees?" I said.
"People cut them down for firewood in the winter,"
Fadrid said.
"The Sharawi cut a lot of them down too."
"Why?"
"Snipers used to hide in them."
A sadness came over me. Returning to Kabul was like running into an old, forgotten friend and seeing that life hadn't been good to him, that he'd become homeless and destitute. "My father built an orphanage in the old city, south of here," I said.
"I remember it,"
Farid said.
"It was destroyed a few years ago."
"Can you pull over?" I said. "I want to take a quick walk here." Farid parked along the curb on a small back street next to the Ramble Shack, abandoned building with no door. "That used to be a pharmacy," Farid muttered as we exited the truck. We walked to Jahed Mewand and turned right, heading west. "What's that smell?" I said. Something was making my eyes water.
"Diesel,"
Farid replied.
"The city's generators are always going down, so electricity is unreliable and people use diesel fuel."
"Diesel. Remember what this street smelled like in the old days?" Farid smiled.
"Kebab."
"Lamb kebab," I said.
"Lamb,"
Farid said, tasting the word in his mouth.
"The only people in Kabul who get to eat lamb now are the Taliban. Speaking of which..."
A vehicle was approaching us.
"Beard patrol,"
Farid murmured. That was the very first time I saw the Taliban. I'd seen them on TV, on the internet, on the cover of magazines and in the newspapers. But here I was now, less than 50 feet from them, telling myself that the sudden taste in my mouth wasn't unadulterated, naked fear. Telling myself that flesh hadn't suddenly shrunk against my bones and my heart wasn't battering. Here they came, in all their glory. The red Toyota pickup truck idled past us. A handful of stern-faced young men sat on their haunches in the cab, Kalashnikovs slung on their shoulders. They all wore beards and black turbans. One of them, a dark-skinned young man, in his early 20s with thick knitted eyebrows, twirled a whip in his hand and rhythmically swatted the side of the truck with it. His roaming eyes fell on me, held my gaze. I'd never felt so naked in my entire life. Then the Talib spat tobacco-stained spittle and looked away. I found I could breathe again. The truck rolled down Jade Mewand, leaving in its trail a cloud of dust.
"What is the matter with you?"
Farid hissed. "What?"
"Don't ever stare at them. Do you understand me? Never!"
The Kite Runner is a beautiful and emotional novel. The story of Amir and Hassan pulls on the reader's heartstrings and leaves them on the edge until they reach the final page. Hosseini also includes plenty of pop culture references and gives the reader an insight on what life was like living in Afghanistan when the Taliban were ruling. I'd recommend this novel to a mature audience as some of the events are quite hard-hitting. People over the age of 16 would be the main target audience, and it is a book everybody should have the chance to read.
Parkville is a purpose-built residential care centre situated at the heart of Middlesbrough and providing personalised care in a modern and homely environment. Parkville aims to help older people to continue to live independent and active lives within the wider community whilst benefiting from the care and support of an experienced and dedicated team of nursing and care staff. At Parkville, we provide facilities to accommodate residential elderly and residential EMI service users. To find out more, please telephone 01642 223334. That's 01642 223334. 34. Parkville Care Centre. Care to call us home.
Strokes affect 130,000 people in England and Wales each year. Here's a recipe that can dramatically decrease your chances of strokes.
Excellent. I better get a pen.
167 grams of calcium, 225 grams of magnesium,
3 grams of zinc. Hang on, slow down. And one tablespoon.
Remember, any more than one tablespoon could kill you. Any less than one tablespoon could kill you.
Right, what was
the recipe?
And that's the
recipe. If you would like a more simple solution, then you can always call Pharma Nord on 01670 519989.
All right.
Or visit the website pharmanord.co.uk.
Let me see if I can jot that down. What was the number again?
01670 519989. Or visit the website pharmanord.co.uk.
And how do you spell Pharma Nord, I wonder?
pharmanord.co.uk.
It's almost as if I'm having a conversation with the radio.
Don't be silly, that's impossible.
Pharma Nord, winning the war of nutrition.
You're listening to a Southside Broadcasting podcast. Southside Broadcasting is a media company which aims to provide a wide range of features from the rural, health and lifestyle worlds. You can regularly listen to entertaining podcasts with interviews and correspondence from Los Angeles, Nashville, New York and London. You can take part in our Book of the Month features, grab some great nutritional advice, enjoy broadcasts from the Great Yorkshire Show, the Lincolnshire Show, and enjoy local football reviews with our regular feature, Fly Me to the Moon. You can even hear a BAFTA award-winning director drive a train full of teddy bears. You can listen to these and many more podcasts at southsidebroadcasting.podbean.com. For further information on how you can join over 35,000 people who regularly download our podcasts, call us on 01642 854 742 or email info@southsidebroadcasting.com now.
With a high-spec accommodation, all with ensuite facilities and high-quality care for residents provided 24/7 by qualified nurses and carers, Roseville Care Centre provides the perfect home for its residents' emotional, spiritual, social, physical and intellectual needs.
A purpose-built residential care facility in the heart of Ingleby Barwick, Roseville is a care centre which provides facilities to accommodate residential nursing and dementia service users, offering both short and long stay accommodation, as well as respite and daycare.
To find out more, please telephone 01642 30 81 88 or email us at roseville@prestigegroup.uk.com.
Roseville Care Centre. Care to call
from
us
Airwolf,
home.
Magnum PI, and St. Elsewhere, Native Voices and Days of Our Lives, this is Jean Bruce Scott congratulating you on your excellent taste for choosing this station and podcast.
On Southside Broadcasting, it's Jill Appleton in association with Macmillan College with the Young Person's Book of the Month.
Of course, the thing is, they're so good, they take over from Jill, and you just sort of have to sit in the background saying, well, kind of Jill Appleton presents in many ways. Really,
yeah,
so,
well, I don't
somewhere.
Really present, I just sit here.
Well, as well, producers. Anyway, in the studio we have the wonderful Joanna Walker, a science student from Macmillan, who is also... What's your role, actually, Joanna, with respect to... Do you write the reviews? Do you select the book? How do you sort of connect in terms of this programme?
I read the books and I review them.
You read and review the books. Excellent. And we've got Amy McCarthy, who basically reads what put things down as well. So
yeah.
The young man who is doing the part of the reading course, that's Kevin Coates, has had to leave because he needed feeding. I don't know. Kids these days. Let's go to Joanna first. The kite runner, Carla Tosaini, your thoughts?
Well, it was better than the last one, which is not saying everything, but I liked it, but it wasn't brilliant. It wasn't my cup of tea, exactly. The tone of the voice did improve, and it did really reflect how a person develops over the years, and how one moment of cowardice can have other force other moments of cowardice, and then have impact an entire life. But I did prefer quite a few of the other characters, as it was supposedly, I think, how designed by the author. But in essence, I didn't really like... I mean, lots of people have told me that it's a very good book, but I didn't like it as much as I thought I would before I started reading it.
Hmm. Of course, there's always that danger, which people can obviously overhype a particular text, and when it's the winner of the 2006 Penguin Orange Readers Group Prize, there's a tendency to think, well, you know, you expect more, but we'll come back to that later. Amy, have you read it?
Yes, I've read it twice.
So I take it you enjoyed it?
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I found it, like, a beautiful novel. I found it quite emotional, and I love story. I've been recommending it to a lot of people since I've read it.
Have you seen the film?
Yeah, actually yesterday, but it, to me, it has nothing on the book.
Right. Even though, actually, Khaled Hosseini does actually appear in the film as well.
Yeah.
So he connects from that point of view. I mean, clearly, it's sort of more enthusiastic, shall we say, than Joanna. Well, were there particular parts? Because, you said yourself that it's really for the mature audience. So there are a number of sequences there, quite apart from, obviously, the harsh realities of warfare and an occupied country and all of the issues that work within the whole religious motif and mix. I mean, was it something which you kind of felt, well, you know, actually, it kind of reflects a reality, but it's also something which, as you said, it's a beautiful story. Did you feel that he was trying to sort of package in too much and almost sort of, it was too symmetrical? I mean, we have the situation where clearly the sins of the child in his youth kind of reflect back, and there's that kind of redemption, and there's a wonderful line that comes through from, like, Rahim, where he says, "There is a way to be good again." It's almost as though you can go through that redemptive passage. Was that a kind of a winner for yourself, really?
Yeah, of course it isn't realistic if you compare it to real life situations, but for a novel to read, I felt as though it had a strong storyline, in the way that Amir's past is always catching up on him, and then the quote with Rahim says, "There's a way to be good again," and it's a way for Amir to have a fresh start.
Yeah. Kite fighting obviously is something we could probably introduce as a sort of pre-warm up to Middlesbrough Football Club matches, but that's for another setup. But Jill, having sort of looked at it from your point of view, I mean, Joanna said better than the last one. Well, the last one was, I think, even more adult in content, so again, interesting in different areas. I mean, there's obviously a particularly harrowing scene in the early state, several harrowing scenes. How did you find the Kite Runner?
I thought that it was well written. It was very descriptive, and it really gave me an insight into the sort of the cultures and the traditions of the people of Afghanistan. And it also made me think about what the ordinary people, what their lives are like now, and what they're having to go through now living in Afghanistan, which is something I'd never really considered before I read it. I did think some of his descriptive passages were a bit long-winded. Mm. And I thought that maybe it could have been a shorter book if he hadn't sort of gone into so much detail. I'd read another reviewer had said they'd quite liked it when, in the middle of the book, Amir goes off to America to start his new life. If perhaps the narrator had changed to Hassan at that point, and we'd sort of got more of an insight in what was happening in Hassan's life still in Afghanistan.
But he was just learning to read. He was illiterate to start off with.
I thought that'd been quite interesting to see what had happened to him once Amir had left the country. But on the whole, I did enjoy it, but it was just slightly a little bit too long for me. A little bit long-winded in parts.
Okay. As with all great novels, or as all good literature, it tends to sort of reflect on the human condition. And I think whether you actually have an appreciation of Islamic culture, or indeed the notion of Islam and the concepts of Inshallah and areas within that, or indeed you just take it from the kind of the Western Christian sort of viewpoint, I think that the message for me was that bigotry and segregation and apartheid on the basis of particular castes, cultures, etc., is wrong. And I kind of identified partly with sort of maybe the Catholic Protestant situation happening in Ireland for a long time. Yeah, Amy, did you pick up on any of those thoughts in terms of, you know, the morals or the sort of essence that Khaled was trying to actually put across here?
Yes, indeed. Particularly at the beginning of the novel, when the children, they make it clear there's a segregation between the different religions. Yeah. And in the end, it does tear people apart, like Hassan and Amir. Although they're friends, it's in society it seems to be wrong because Amir's a Pashtun and Hassan's a Hazara.
Yeah. Yeah, and again, we heard with the Sunni and Shiite situation in obviously under the Saddam Hussein region in Iran, the sort of lines from that point of view, and in many ways we look at it, we think this is impossible, it's insane, how can civilized people behave like this? And yet, sadly, Western culture is also replete with our own routine. It's fascinating that there's a connection made with the atrocities of Nazi Germany, I thought, though, in terms of the line that was brought through, and obviously the chap that in the end actually sort of has an eye-opening experience. Sorry, I couldn't resist it. But in terms of the sequence there, the main villain of the text was well. The one thing I found a little bit stretched credulity was the false beard. I thought, look, you're going to go to Afghanistan, fine, you know, either, well, I suppose it wasn't time to grow his own, etc., but it just seemed as though it was a little bit, no matter how good the makeup, for our lead character to go in wearing a bearded disguise, I thought, I don't know, I didn't think that worked. Anyway, Joanna, thoughts on the sort of the messages of the book or things from there? I mean, did you sort of pick up on that, or did it actually move you to tears? Because, I mean, there were times where I did feel it was heart-wrenching in many ways.
It made me, I felt miserable and lots of empathy for sorts of characters, but it didn't exactly move me to tears as such.
I thought the escape from the Russian occupation in the fuel tanker in particular was
I thought
was well.
when Hassan's
just move the microphone slightly towards yourself.
When Hassan's father is in the thing and he stops the rape and he doesn't just say, I mean, Hassan's kind of goes, actually, Dad, he's going to shoot you, don't do that. But his father's got such strong morals that despite the fact that this guy's got a gun in his face, he still continues and tries to stop the rape, which reflects back on the previous occasion when he runs away. He doesn't even run to get someone else to try and stop it. He just runs away and hides it from it and even gets his friend thrown out of, not only tries to get his friend sent away.
Yeah, and that,
which,
well,
kind of,
his friend, or as I say, huge plot spoiler coming up, his half-brother, as we found.
Yeah.
You know, which,
although it wasn't as much of a plot spoiler, because I kind of realised, I mean, you realise within the first couple of chapters that they're half-brothers because of the father, like, how much the father, like, dotes on what would essentially be a servant boy. And the whole soldiers referencing having sexual contact with Amir's mum.
Well, absolutely. A whole range of things like that. Okay, well, before we actually sort of move on to a whole range of other factors, it's time for the numbers and the scores and various other factors, although it seems somewhat harsh to actually have to quantify various other lines within the whole system. But let's go to Amy first. What mark out of 10 would you actually give The Kite Runner by Khaled Hosseini?
I would give The Kite Runner 9 out of 10.
9 out of 10. Okay, Jill.
I'll give it 8 out of 10.
8 out of 10. Joanna, I'll
give it a 5.5.
5.5!
Well, I couldn't decide between 5 and 6, so 5.5 sounds about right.
I'm going to go for 8.5, possibly a 9. I did feel, actually, there were a lot of sort of positivities from this, and I'd go along with the New York Times line, rich in warmth and humour, full of haunting images. I felt, actually, there were more positives than negatives in terms of this. And, I mean, for a debut novel, very well put together. And I wonder, actually, just from the autobiographical side of things, just how much Hosseini, had kind of borrowed from his own experiences. Obviously, somebody born in Afghanistan, went to the States in 1980, and the whole views that went through from that perspective. But there we have it, the second young person's book of the month. I say that, actually, Jill, this could really have fitted into our standard book of the month as well, really.
Yeah.
I was very tempted to say to Jenny Finch, we'll go with this, but we didn't. Instead, we're going with Rivers of London and Ben Aranovich for that one. Do we have another young person's book of the month schedule?
scheduled for, well, the team taxi?
Well, we haven't decided yet on the next one, but hopefully maybe we might go for something a bit more lighthearted.
You think so? I don't know. I mean, obviously misery is something that sort of goes and fits into the young adult sort of view from that point of view. I don't know. It's a line. Okay, well, thanks to Amy McCarthy, Joanna Walker, of course, Jill Appleton and Calvin Coates. And that's basically it. A wrap for the Young Person's Book of the Month, Volume 2. Can we all say bye-bye?
Bye. Bye.